We are joined on the line now by Kai Hushka, who is with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. We have heard recently that in the midst of this pandemic, one of the responses of the Trump administration is to cut regulations that the Environmental Protection Agency would normally be enforcing. Could you talk about what's being cut and what are the impacts of that?
Yeah, the decision which came out a few weeks back was basically about pulling back the Environmental Protection Agency, that's the federal part of the government, which is supposed to be overseeing activities that have environmental impacts, which include things like monitoring activities that have a high likelihood of environmental damage. So whether it's the fossil fuel industry or the industrial agricultural industry, but the federal government has had people and staff and resources pointed towards making sure that corporate interests are basically following the rules. And the decision was to basically freeze that, so to leave corporations really to monitor themselves. So there's been a lot of talk and chatter out there amongst environmental groups about the impact of really letting, I suppose, the foxes to guard the henhouse kind of situation here, and really the ramifications to the environment and public health because of that. So these environmental agencies that we've relied on to protect us, and though they may have staved off some increased damage, really are just about monitoring our own demise. And so if anything that we should be really looking into at this time with the decision to basically freeze lots of elements of the EPA is to say, are these agencies really doing what we thought they were doing in the first place or should have been doing? And if not, what can we do differently in how we actually establish environmental protections? And if we really start to think about that, we have to do pretty much a radical overhaul, because the system we have today is really not about environmental protections, about monitoring how fast and to what degree we can actually destroy the environment under the guise that somehow we're protecting it.
Mm. And, of course, these are considered externalities by our economic system, in that those producing the pollution don't then have to pay for the costs of the public health problems and the degradation of our environment, because those are not considered costs of doing business. One of the things that Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund is pushing for is a rights of nature doctrine. What is that? What does it look like? And how would that be implemented? How would it be different than what the EPA does?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up. That really goes to the heart of that deep overhaul. And part of that deep overhaul is really how systemically we look at ourselves as human populations, as economic systems, to our direct connection to the ecology that we're a part of. Rights of Nature is saying that if we don't actually honor those systems that sustain us in a manner that allows those systems to sustain themselves, we can see the writing on the wall. And that writing on the wall today, of course, is climate change, you know, global ecosystem collapse, even the elements of desertification, ocean acidification, you know, viruses, pandemics, all of that stuff is really traceable to our own activities. Rights of Nature is saying that if we don't actually protect, legally protect nature for nature's sake, we can see, and we are seeing what happens because of it. So instead of authorizing, as our current environmental laws do, the rate or the degree of environmental destruction, the consideration would be at the very front end on what we do as far as human activity is this going to affect nature's ability to exist, persist, naturally evolve, all the things that nature needs to do for our own benefit as well as nature's. And if not, well, those kinds of activities can't either start, or if they do happen, they would be in violation of nature's rights. So it's not a new concept in the sense of the world is concerned. It is very new in the sense of our own country having to kind of move into that legal reality. Other places have begun to do that and really put nature first and understand that our economic systems, our human communities need to be part of that, not destroy and dominate nature, but actually honor and protect it, and that we have to work within those natural boundaries and not exceed them.
What can states do in order to preserve or promote the rights of nature doctrine? I understand that in Pennsylvania recently, it was invoked in order to revoke a drilling permit. And here in Oregon, we've got the Jordan Cove fracking pipeline terminal that was recently approved by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission after having been disapproved at the state level. What can states do in response in order to actually invoke this rights of nature and prevent these types of fossil fuel infrastructure projects from moving forward in our states?
It's going to take people really standing up, organizing, and coming together for what they believe in and the values they believe in. And if you love and want to protect your place, you're going to have to move in a very different manner than the system currently says is quote-unquote allowable. So places like Grant Township, even places like Lincoln County in Oregon have stood up for what they believed in, which is to say we have a right to clean air and clean water, natural ecosystems, rivers, watersheds have a right to exist and be unpolluted. And what they've done is asserted that through lawmaking. So they have passed local laws that really do two things. One, put forward the new notion of what the legal structure needs to look like in protecting nature's rights, but simultaneously challenging higher levels of law. So challenging state law that says, well, you can't protect yourselves at a better level than we say is allowable, even though what states are often doing is not really protecting the environment. They're allowing that corporate activity to move forward that destroys that environment that people in counties or communities are trying to protect. So there's a direct challenge, a resistance to really unjust law. So it's not so different than civil rights movements when they've had to challenge unjust law. People are doing it now from an environmental perspective. And through that, you begin to see momentum building, as in Grant Township, whether it's through legal breakthroughs or at least legal validation, but more importantly, the recognition that we have an upside-down system that has disempowered communities from protecting themselves, and rights of nature has become this vehicle of which communities are standing up for themselves, pushing back against unjust state and federal law as a means to begin to try to change that structure. And you're starting to see some movement that eventually could mean changing constitutional structures at the state or federal level.
Just for our listeners, if you could detail a little more about what exactly happened in Grant Township and why it's so significant.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story. It's a sad one, a hopeful one, an ever-changing one in the sense of their saga. You know, it's 5 years in the making. You have a tiny little, 600-700-person community who was basically targeted for toxic industrial waste. So waste product coming in from the hydraulic fracturing industry, which is, the process for a pretty pervasive process now to pull up natural gas. There's a byproduct that's toxic, and they have to find places to get rid of it. So they basically target places where there are dried up drill wells and then inject this toxic waste into the ground with really no concept of the impact it's going to have environmentally and on public health. And this community said, no, we don't want it. All the while, the state was saying it's fine. And so they passed a law saying we don't want this under our ability to protect our rights and to make these kind of decisions and protect the ecosystems as part of our own communities, not just the humans, but the non-human species. And as happens in these kind of cases, you had the fossil fuel industry suing them to say, no, our ability to basically poison your community is greater than your ability to protect it. And then, interestingly enough, the state regulatory agency stepped in and also sued the community saying, hey, you can't do this. We think it's fine, and you're going to get the toxic waste whether you want it or not. And the most recent thing that you mentioned was the state basically backing down, saying, well, we're going to revoke the permits now because there looks to be some possibility that the communities actually can have a higher standard. And we don't know what's going to happen here, but we're going to pull these permits and stop the fossil fuel company from dumping the toxic waste, and rightfully so, capitulate to the community who's saying we want a higher standard of protection, and you, the state, must honor that. It's a pretty shocking change of course, and Whether it holds or not is yet to be seen, but this idea that communities need more recognized power to protect themselves is not a new thing, and it really ranges across a broad spectrum of issues, whether it's, you know, gentrification of neighborhoods, whether it's more, you know, classic environmental issues, whether it's labor issues. We're all been handcuffed at the community level instead of actually being freed and liberated from making the real critical decisions. And it's really come from corporate powers, but corporate powers manipulating state and federal government to come crashing down on us. So the resistance, the effort to make laws they did in Grant Township to say, no, we don't want this, and really stand up to what they believe in, and run, you know, go the distance, is really a pretty amazing story, and hopefully an inspirational one for communities everywhere to do the same, because we all have our issues and we're all facing a very similar structure that is coming, you know, decisions coming from the top down, or as we started out our conversation here, the so-called agencies that are protecting us making decisions that, well, we're no longer going to, you know, send out people to monitor the damage that's being caused, and so you're kind of on your own. I think is actually a great opportunity for communities, whether it's smaller ones or even larger cities, to really, really take the reins and say, no, we clearly need more power to protect ourselves, to evolve ourselves. And there's been a massive failure systemically induced, really, at the state and federal level. And it's time we have a different paradigm here.
Do you feel like the movement at Standing Rock over a year ago now was sort of an impetus nationally for people standing up and saying, we are protectors of the water, which was the standpoint that people took at Standing Rock, and was an indigenous-led movement? I mean, is that the kind of leadership that you're talking about to challenge these regulatory agencies at the state and federal level?
Yes, I think it's a fantastic example of the power of community, the power of resistance, the power of truth, the power to protect, the pulling out of the realization that we have a system that largely doesn't care about life. We have to take that energy that a Standing Rock put out and absorb that in the communities where we're at. And then we have to take it further. And in simple terms, we have to rewrite the rules, because what had happened in Standing Rock was happening on the Big Island with Mauna Kea there, and the indigenous-led effort of the people of Hawaii and so many other places, whether it's indigenous or non-indigenous communities. As we have rules that are really written to eliminate our ability to have a voice. And so the first step is to actually call that out. The next step should be to actually change those rules for the sake of our own existence, really. So we need growing mentalities of not just resisting and pushing back and hopefully stopping the worst of the harms as quickly as possible, but also understanding that we have to script a different reality for ourselves. And if we're going to come together under forms of government, that really means rewriting some basic tenets of how government is going to work and how decisions are going to be made, because the way that it sits today, that there's really a small number of entities and individuals that dictate our own reality. And unfortunately, that reality is pretty bleak. And now is a time, especially in the situation we're in, to really think about that, saying, do we really want that? And if not, well, let's take that energy from a Standing Rock and basically impose Standing Rock type values and energy in the places we're at pretty much every day until those rules really are rewritten and we can actually have the beginnings of an existence that we deserve to have, whether it's people or the planet itself.
Yeah, and of course, people are the planet. We're all a part of one ecosystem, so we can't live without it. I want to thank you for joining us today. Again, I've been speaking with Kai Huski, who is with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Their website is celdf.org. I know they've got some webinars, some organizing going on, so that website again is celdf.org. Thank you, Kai, for joining us on KBOO today.
Thanks for giving me the time. Really appreciate it.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News In Depth.
couldn't think of what to say.